and sweep it high. Run flat, stay low. Run the mountain, run the road. Run past the eight stand to the commode. Oh, run sweep it high. Run flat, stay low. One stream.
Welcome to the Mountain Outpost pod. Welcome, everyone. We're back at pretty much the regularly scheduled time on Tuesday night here. This is episode 31. I'm your co-host, Jamil Curry, Jam Jam, here with Skizzlefresh Skylar Hall. How you doing today, sir, this evening?
Holding up, holding in. Always crazy times, always crazy times. Been very busy. We're about to have just like 6 days of rain consecutively here in the Bay Area, so... it's a fun time of cross country season for, I guess, myself, but also the kids. First time they're going to run in inclement weather tomorrow at a race. So I was trying to like mentally prepare them during the pre-race festivities today. So, dude, I'm excited.
Could get a little sloppy out there. What are the cross country courses like out there? I ran cross country here in Arizona. We did a lot of canal paths, sometimes some desert, some golf courses. What do they have out your way? In the Bay Area?
We have a lot of sort of like regional park type situations. So fire roads, like double track type things that you're running on. Not too many asphalt or long stretches of asphalt. Not particularly hilly. Like most of them are pretty much just glorified track races with some grass. Tomorrow's course is actually, we have pretty much all gravel or packed dirt, which will be interesting because it's a park that they've been doing construction in for at least 5 years. So things are always moving around. So the course always has to slightly change. But when you're just making random new ditches and whatnot, what that does to how the rain's going to move off of hills and like out of the forested area to where we're actually running is going to be very interesting. So not sure what that's going to do to the footing. There's going to be a couple tight right-handers on asphalt, and so some kids might slip out on some blacktop. It's going to be mayhem. So, yeah, it's fine. It's cool. We need more hay bales. We need more things to actually jump. We need more steeplechasing in cross country. That's always my push. We actually had a huge argument at the beginning of the season because the course that was hardest in our league got taken out of rotation because – some folks complained that the hills were too much, even though it's like 200 total feet of climbing in a 5K, which for us is laughable. But for the kids, it's too much. And I was like, y'all just need to step your game up and do better. So whatever. It's fine. My kids are tough. They're ready. So
good. Absolutely. Will, tonight we do really want to get into the Biggs backyard. I just sent out a tweet actually that says we're going to be talking about that tonight. We are going to talk. We do like to mix things up on this show, talk about all things running, so that be track, cross country, marathons, road, trail, ultra, anything and everything in between and beyond. So I would say the beyond on the far end of the spectrum is the race that just happened, the Biggs backyard, world championship. Incredible, incredible stuff. We are going to talk about it. I was just watching the wrap up on the Facebook Live with Harvey Lewis, the winner, and we'll talk more about that. Just a reminder, we do stream this live to YouTube. So if you want to check in with us, I am monitoring the comments down there. So if you want to ask any questions or chime into the discussion, feel free. We also have our Discord. Is it Air Viper Running Discord, I believe? Go check out that, join it up, and we're trying to get some more discussion over there as well. So do you want to jump into some cross-country stuff first?
Are you
drinking tonight?
I am drinking tonight because it's getting cold outside, so I had to get something to warm me up. So tonight I have the Southern Tier Warlock. So I think a few weeks ago I had the Pumpkin, which is the greatest pumpkin ale beer variety in America. And this is another drink from Southern Tier. It's their Imperial Pumpkin Stout. It's a little bit darker, still pretty much the same ABV. And it'll keep me warm after I get off this podcast and go watch the season premiere of the Bachelorette. What are you drinking?
So I pre-cracked it so that I wouldn't make a fool of myself on screen just in case, but we did get some new beverages here at the office, and I've got from Huss. This is one I've never had before, but you might remember Papago Brewery, right, from your time. So Huss bought out Papago, and the Orange Blossom was like one of their signature beers, right? Well, yeah. This is the Papago Cherry Blossom. So we got black cherry and wheat. So that's what I'm drinking.
Okay. Well, cheers, sir.
Finish cracking it open. Cheers it up. Oh, yeah.
Tink. All right. Great ASMR for the listeners at home. All right. Great. So
jump into it. Yeah.
I'll jump into Run Flat News, and then we'll hop over to the it's like Run Steep, I guess, but that's not really what is going to be really germane to most of your topics tonight.
Yeah,
but
it's like
it's fine.
Ultra running news.
Yeah. So I got the shorter, flatter, faster stuff. And this past weekend was huge in terms of two marathons that were not the Abbott Marathon Majors, as well as huge cross country implications in both Division I and Division III college. So let's jump to the roads first and talk about the big marathons that happened that were not the Abbott Marathon Majors. For the past 3 weeks or so, we've been talking about the fact that no man has broken 204 this fall season, and that has finally changed. Tamarat Tola went down to Amsterdam, won in a course record 203.39, made a big push with about 20 minutes to go, blew open the race, and came away with the win there. On the women's side, Angela Tanui ran 217.57. She was originally on the start list for Boston, but after some visa issues and just craziness that is international travel these days, she pivoted, audibled, ended up in Amsterdam, and came through with a big win there. And then over in Paris, which was a race that people thought should have been Shalane's, you know, Tokyo replacement, but we're going to let that slide. On the women's side, Tejiste Mamoui, I believe that's how you say it. She won the women's race in 2:26.12. And on the men's side, Alicia Rodich won in a course record 2:04.23. And this race was super entertaining, unlike Amsterdam, where big moves later in the race really stretched out the field. Both of these podiums, all the top runners 1 through 3 were separated by less than 30 seconds on both the men's and the women's side. So super competitive till the end. I can only imagine what it's like to run that far and then basically lose it in a kick in the last 150 or 200. But I guess that's just the nature of the beast these days. So those are the road marathons that happened internationally. Here in America, Shalane Watch stayed going. And because she was not in Tokyo, because Tokyo was canceled for this fall season, she had to go run a virtual race. Yes, something we were all super familiar with in 2020 and even early 2021. She brought it back. And up in Oregon, she ran 2:35.14. That's right. Shalane ran a 2:46 in Chicago, runs a 2:40 in Boston, and then a week later comes back and runs a 2:35.14. Again, these are pretty when it's a virtual race, you could create your own course. I'm sure she made it pretty much as buttery smooth as made sense. No need to try to do another Boston-esque effort with all that climbing. But she is 5 out of 6 on her goal of 6 sub-3-hour marathons in a 7-week period. And now all eyes turn to New York in, 2.5 weeks now? November 7th. Somebody else can do the math on that. And we'll see if she goes full send or if she just plays it conservative and tries to just her running conservatively is still probably like a 2:37 in New York, let's be real. But, you know, does she hop in? Does she try to run like 2:25? Does she try to win the women's race? Who knows at this point? Things are crazy. Her and Dez could just be like having fun, goofing around like, hey, we already ran 1-5 marathons this fall. Let's just send it one time and see what happens. So who knows what's going to happen. We'll break it down once we get to that week. But Shalane on track to make it happen in the marathon. Cool. let's shorten that distance from 26 miles down to 6K and 8K, because that's what was happening on the grass this past weekend. Division One cross country, we had two meets with huge nationals implications. For those of you who are unfamiliar with the college cross country scene, in Division One, there are nine regions across the country. Two automatic qualifiers out of regional meets make it to nationals, and then everything else is basically who have you beat in the postseason, and can you get pushed into the national meet until they fill out the full field of 31 teams, which means when you have major meets with a lot of ranked teams, the more people you beat in that meet, the better your chances of qualifying for that national meet, even if you don't take the top two spots at regionals. So huge, huge issue, and a lot of big teams came out to play this past weekend. We had two meets, one at Florida State University, which is actually home of the Division I National Cross Country Championships in November. It was November 22nd. Could be the 20th. It's always flips between Saturday and Monday, so I'll double check that. And then we had a second meet, the Nuttycombe Invite up in Wisconsin. FSU, faster, flatter, but just, you know, straight grass, well-groomed track meet. Nuttycombe, a little bit hillier, known to favor strength-based runners. So let's break down what happened at Florida State first. On the men's side, you had NAU come out and just dominate on the men's side, scored 64 points. They had a spread of 31 seconds between their first and fifth runner. A true freshman was their seventh man. He was, you know, clearly trying to work through a couple issues. So if he can speed up, they got a good 6'7". They can step up and support. But when you win by over 60 points in a pre-national meet against seven other ranked squads, you're pretty much set up for success. So NAU doing what they do best. Second place, Colorado. A big run for them. 38-second spread. And third was Arkansas. So Colorado came in ranked seventh nationally. Arkansas came in ranked eighth. BYU, a surprising fourth-place finish. They were ranked ahead of the prior two teams going into the meet. Connor Mance won the race outright, and Casey Klinger was eighth overall. But their 3 through 5 just couldn't necessarily get the job done, as Colorado, Arkansas, and BYU were all separated by just 3 points, 128, 128, and 131. So super entertaining. Once again, we talked about it a couple weeks ago, Notre Dame underperforms. Four of their top five from nationals, their national team this past March that took second in the nation, they ran in this race. They were without Olympian Yared Nuguse, but still, you have folks who have national championship experience, and they still come in only fifth place here. So Notre Dame with some work to do really left some folks wondering, are they for real, or are they stunting and playing with us? Homer alert for you, Jamil. ASU took 31st in this race, but Vincent Mari, the junior from ASU, placed 15th overall. So there is somebody in the greater Phoenix area who is tearing it up in the cross country scene. So feel good about that. On the women's side, Colorado came out guns blazing, 54 points for the win. They went 1-5-9-16-23, paced out by Abby Nichols coming through for the win. Their seventh member of the team beat almost every other team's fourth best runner. That's how tight their pack was. So Colorado, not to be played with. They came in ranked fifth nationally and just third in their own region. But look for them to move up as the weeks move forward. Utah was in second. Florida State was in third. Ole Miss was in fourth. That pretty much went to scratch. Nothing too crazy there. Big takeaway from a relatively less stacked field on the women's side. Colorado, no bones about it. Stunting, get excited if you are a fan of the Buffs. Going up to Wisconsin, this is where things got a little wild. The men's side, not as stacked here as it was at FSU, but we definitely saw some crazy things happening. Wesley Kiptoo, you might remember him from the winter and the spring, always races in gloves. He like went out crazy fast at indoor nationals, came out at outdoor cross country and just blew up because he tried to race 3 national championship meets in 3 days. He actually did win here by 9 seconds. He had a 20-second lead at 6K and just like cruised in the last 2,000 meters. But he still wins and leads Iowa State to a surprising victory here on the team side for the men. Stanford was in second place. They were third ranked nationally coming in. So a good showing for them. Obviously, they would have liked to beat Iowa State. But when you have 5 of your 6 runners at Stanford who are they're freshmen or they have freshman eligibility, this bodes very well for them to be able to threaten NAU, if not this year, for the next 3 to 4 years as well. Cooper Tier was in second. You might remember him from the track scene. But Oregon did a fairly bad for them 6th place finish here. So they finished behind the 12th ranked team in the nation, the 11th ranked team in the nation, and the 30th ranked team in the nation. So Oregon, do better is the moral of the story there. And then on the women's side, we had, this is where things were, can I say bananas? I'll say bananas. I'll try to keep it clean in case the kids are listening at home. NC State and BYU had been tied basically in the rankings all season. The coaches just gave NC State the nod last week. All 3 of those teams show up to Nettie Cone, and nothing goes according to plan. New Mexico, the third-ranked team, comes out for the win with an 18-second spread. Their whole team is just all together. This team went 12, 15, 16, 24, 26 for the win, to win by 9 points over second-place NC State and third-place BYU. Now, NC State didn't have Hannah Steelman. BYU wasn't running Whitney Orton, so they have some big guns. They can come in and upset the apple cart come nationals. But in terms of getting a big win and confidence boosting, New Mexico is ready to rock. New Mexico also won the women's race in the open. So like the JV race, which means they have depth that they can fill in. So if any of these women end up getting hurt or injured or anything like that, then they can slide in. So big Division I implications, craziness, polls are going to be moving around. And in 2 weeks' time when we have conference, it's going to be really important to watch who beats who, because then we start factoring out like who's for real at regionals and where some of these wins and losses going to potentially affect if people end up even making that national meet. Ooh, all right, D3. Yeah, I'm here. Drink. Ooh.
Take a drink.
All right, we're back. So D3, slightly different qualifying system for nationals. 10 regions, 1 automatic qualifier. Everything else, coach's decision, coach's poll. So at least Division I is based on like who you've beaten before, like you get a win. So, you know, if you beat a team that qualified for nationals, you get a win, and then like that allows you to get pushed in. It's a whole thing. Division I, they basically just look at the list like, okay, who should we put in next? It's not the best system, to say the least. But since only 1 team automatically qualifies, weekends like this, interregional weekend, super important because your conference might not necessarily have a ton of depth where you can face another good team and really argue your case. Same thing for regionals. So at Augustana, we had the number 1 and number 2 nationally ranked programs, Wartburg and Pomona Pitzer, go head to head, which is great because Pomona Pitzer isn't even in the region that Augustana was hosting. They traveled to legitimately take on the top team, and it did not disappoint. Wartburg came out on top over Pomona Pitzer, 39 points to 46. Wartburg had a 30-second spread, and they were led by the top 2 finishers in the race overall. And Pomona Pitzer had a 20-second spread, so just like super tight. So these teams, super, super set up for success at nationals, because if you can pack in well when the conditions get super sloppy, that means you can pick off a lot of people late in that race. North Central was 3rd on the men's side with 120 points. Otterbein was 4th with 121 points. And WashU was 5th with 122 points. Yeah, that got really fun. All of this is blown up because Otterbein and WashU's 5th, as well as Cornell College's first finisher, all finished within 2/10 of a second after 8K. So if any of those positions switch around, that would directly impact those final scores. And since only one person's going to come out of each region, and WashU and North Central are in the same region, could have very real implications for which one of them actually ends up going come November. On the women's side, Pomona Pitzer flipped the script, won with 68 points. Wartburg was second with 75 points. Wartburg came in the second-ranked program. Pomona Pitzer was only the second-best in the West. So for them to win is a huge upset. So congrats to the Pomona Pitzer women as they go back to California and get ready to try to top CMC or CMS, technically, Claremont Scripps, McKenna, somewhere in there. Claremont Mud Scripps, there you go, CMS, and try to take that that West title and the automatic bid. But most importantly for me, Connecticut College, home of the NESCAC rash of 2006, the only place I've ever been spiked completely through a shoe and run through mud and morass with an open wound in my foot. Conn College hosted a phenomenal race this weekend where I'm not going to say my Williams Eves, but I think they're near and dear to all of us. Williams won on both the men's and women's side, as we expected. On the men's side, paced out by Aiden Ryan, who won an 8K by 46 seconds. How do you win a five-mile race by 46 seconds against a team that's ranked fourth in the nation? I don't know, but he did it, so it was awesome. MIT was second and 43 points. Williams and MIT are just dominating the Northeast, so we're really excited to see them race anytime. Third place was Middlebury, fourth was RPI, and fifth was the host, Conn College. So all those programs are set up for a good time. The one disappointment was actually Amherst finishing 11th. That's right. No surprise there if you're a Williams fan that Amherst shit the bed. But that's our rival school, in case you aren't following at home. But they take 11th place, significantly underperform their rank. It looked like they had a guy who kind of held out. Might have had a little injury, so hopefully he rebounds well, because we love to see some NESCAC pride. But Amherst did themselves no favors and are really going to need to show up at both conference and regionals if they want to secure their bid to nationals. On the women's side, Williams for the win again, hit it. MIT second again, and just really pretty much to scratch with the NESCAC teams completely dominating after MIT with the next four spaces in the race. And then lastly, two quick ones. SUNY Geneseo handled business up in the metro region on the men's side. On the women's side, Johns Hopkins goes 2-3-6-7-10 for a 28-point win, which is exactly what you'd expect from the defending champion program. And then at Oberlin, John Carroll won by 7 points over Wisconsin Whitewater. They came in ranked 7th and 8th nationally, so very close race as expected. So looking forward to see that battle again. Then on the women's side, Carnegie Mellon for the win over Allegheny, and Evie Budelmeyer for the win in a 6K by 31 seconds. That's right, a 3¾ miles race that she won by 31 seconds. So if you're looking for an individual to watch on the women's side, Evie Budelmeyer is your person from Treen. That's it. That's cross country rundown in a nutshell. Time for a drink.
Take a drink. We do have a question from the chat. They're jumping straight past cross country and going to, what is your A goal for NYC?
Wow. Okay. I was not prepared for that pivot. That's a good question. This might slide depending on how the next couple of weeks go, but I mean, ultimately try the PR, right? I think coming out of Boston, if you take that as a pretty good long tempo run, for lack of a better sort of interpretation of that experience, legs are clearly strong. I definitely need to get a bit more hill running in so that once I get back from New York, I'm ready for quad. So that should bode well for the bridges. And then we just got to send it. So a goal would be obviously PR, which would be, you know, 252 or sub 252. B goal, I mean, would probably be sub 3, just to sort of continue to check that box of having a sub 3 marathon each year that races actually happen. But honestly, it's going to be fun. you know, Boston was such an atmosphere and a hype train that I'm just excited to get out there. It's not a course that's built for speed. Doesn't mean it, I'm not going to race it hard. If anything, those courses usually favor me. They have since my own cross country days, the harder, the better. So yeah, man, just gonna go full send. And then as soon as I finish in Central Park, try to find a good bar to watch some football and just enjoy the rest of the trip.
Legit. Should we touch on some stuff that happened this past weekend in the ultra scene?
I think that's what the people want.
And then we'll talk about something this weekend. Obviously, I guess we could just jump right into Biggs. I know there's still a lot of people here in the chat probably want to talk about that. So Biggs Backyard 2021. This most people probably know the format, but if not, it's a last person standing where you have to run, walk, crawl, whatever, 4.1667 miles every hour. You start on the start of the top of each hour. You have to finish before the hour is up and line up again. And why is it 4.1667? Well, that's the pace you need to do 100 miles in 24 hours. So every single day equals 100 miles. And this is something, it's a kind of an idea that Laz came up with really a long time ago. I think when he was a kid, and now it has kind of like evolved into this ridiculous thing where people are, they're like achieving these levels of this event that I think none of us thought were possible a couple years ago. I think it was like, oh, wow, they went 48 hours. This is crazy. Oh, now they did 60. And it just keeps going up from there. And like in the past year, we've seen, I think like 12 of the top 15 performances or something. It's ridiculous. They just keep raising the bar. And so highly anticipated this weekend. As it was the return of Biggs, there are now qualifier races all across the world, and they call them, maybe unfortunately, they also call them golden ticket races. It's a term that's, you know, maybe a bit overused, but you get the idea. You can earn your spot in Biggs at Laz's house. It's literally held in his backyard, and then the night loops are run on a road, which is, I guess, his front yard or something. So, yeah, last year was due to the pandemic. They had races all around the world. So those in Tennessee were competing against those in Belgium and France and Japan and Mexico and everywhere else. And the interesting part of this is you can only continue going like one lap more than your fellow competitors. And so last year, that was an interesting piece of it. If there was only one person left in a given country, they had to bow out, essentially. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so fast forward, here we are, this year's edition. It started Saturday morning in Tennessee. This is Tuesday night, and they just finished. So that's a long time. And it turns out that there were three runners that were going all the way until they broke the previous record. So a year ago during this event, it was Courtney DeWalter and then Harvey Lewis. I believe Courtney did 68 yards. They call them yards every hour. So 68 yards, 200 and some odd miles, 70 miles. And Harvey was the assist runner. So he's the runner-up. He dropped out. And a couple Belgium runners continued on. Courtney had to stop because Harvey stopped. And the Belgium runners did 71, I believe it was, before that one of them stopped. And then, or maybe it was 75, I'm sorry. I believe it was 75. And then since then, in 2021, at one of the qualifying races, someone went 81 yards. And that was the new record before this weekend. And so we had three runners. It was down to three. Harvey, shoot, I should get the names. I apologize. Fill that dead time. Chris Roberts. And then Tiramichi Morishita from Japan. So it's these three folks. They were going at it. It was pretty incredible to watch. So they were, you know, breaking the record on, they were on their day lap, so they were on the trail in the backyard, and I tuned in off and on throughout the day, and there were times when Harvey and I believe Tiramichi, they have to do a little out and back on the road to begin each lap, and they were racing each other back through the start finish line. I don't know if it was just a mental game or if they just totally lost their minds, but they were sprinting, racing. Like, I don't know why. I guess you're 80 hours in and that's what you do. I don't know. Anyways, so Tiramucci, I believe on the record tying lap or the record breaking lap, I believe they I saw a tweet that he tripped and fell on the trail and like lost consciousness for a minute, or maybe he just passed out, who knows. But he ended up missing the hour start for the next one. So he was out, and then it was Chris and Harvey, and I think Chris bowed out their first night loop. So this is night 4 that they were just beginning, and he ended up going out, and then he came back in and called it. I think his knees were just completely done. So Harvey is out there, and it is an out and back on the road part, so he probably hit the out and back, hit the halfway point, turned around, not seeing Chris, and then figured out that he would win the race. So that just ended, I think, an hour ago. If you want to see some video coverage, they did live stream a lot of the event in parts. Of course, like the most interesting part is around the hour, like the little lead up and kind of when they're finishing the hour. That's on the Biggs Backyard Facebook group. But yeah, 85 hours is what it took to win this thing, which is 360 miles, I believe. Something insane like that. 358, maybe. Yeah.
I think somebody in the chat said 354. So yeah.
354. Still, yeah.
And less than. That's the dirt. Because what's the 6-day total record?
6-day record is, it's like 638 miles, I believe. So obviously, yeah, every day that passes is 100 miles. So if they would have made it to day 4, 96 hours, it would have been 400. So it's funny because early on, like a hundred, and you can't go any faster. So 100 miles in the first 24 hours, not saying everyone can do that, but most, I would say most runners could probably do that on a relatively flat course, especially you have the brakes. I think most of the field that was entered at Biggs this year did that. There's like 36 starters. I think like 30 or something did the 100 miles in 24 hours. And then I think a dozen did 200 miles in 48 hours. And then it started to whittle down from there. But yeah, I know that a lot of people in their minds, a lot of these competitors are like have that 100, like just the triple digits in their mind. Like 100 yards is like, it's there for the taking right now. And it's interesting because, right, just a year ago, the record was 68. And then we saw Carl do 75 and then 81. Now 85, it's like it jumped up a lot. And they had three people all the way to the record now. So they just keep pushing it. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see 100 next year.
I mean, that was like the real prediction that we had on last week's show, is that we would see a record. It was just a matter of how much.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the increased focus on this format and the more opportunities to practice it, because we have the golden ticket races, we have so many other this popping up, like to be able to dial that in means that this should be blown out of the water in the next year or two. Again, it's just a matter of the right conditions and the right field to allow it to, because again, you need a second who's there to push the whole way, because you don't have the luxury of, oh, I'm just going to do extra 15 on my own because I feel like it.
Yeah. It's still a relatively young format. I mean, I think that he created the event maybe 10 years ago. So I think people are learning a lot right now. Obviously solving the sleep piece of it is important, but I mean, there's folks in the 6 day race that hardly sleep at all. Like, they may not sleep for more than 10 minutes at a time. So, I mean, Harvey, it looked like he could have kept going this time. That's usually how it goes. Like, the person that is forced to stop, they're not at their absolute limit when they are forced to stop. Like, maybe Harvey had another 4, 6, 8, 10 hours in him. Who knows? And then we're right up there. Like, we're getting close to 90. And you know, Chris's knees took him out. But, you know, next time we might see 5 or 6 people make it to 80-plus hours, and then it just kind of keeps leveling up from there.
Absolutely. And, I mean, you know, thinking through some of the other big names, you know, Courtney, Maggie, you know, if they went into one of these fresh, having not raced, you know, in Courtney's case, having not done UTMB, just – what, a month and a half ago, you know, who knows what she would be able to bring to the table at full force. So, you know, I don't think it's in her financial best interest to skip UTMB to do Big's Backyard, probably from a contract standpoint. But that being said,
Solomon's sponsored Big's this year.
This is true.
So maybe that becomes the priority next year. You never know. But, I mean, even last year, after doing the Colorado Trail, I mean, look what she did at Big, 68 laps. And she could have kept going last year significantly further. So, but that's the thing. It's all about the assist. It's a dynamic. So as much as you're competing with your fellow runner, you are also rooting for them and keeping an eye out for them. So... Mm-hmm. It's a really, really interesting format. I think it's super, super cool. Yeah, people are asking me when I'm going to go do it. I don't know. I'd have to go run one of the golden ticket races to qualify. And I don't know when that would be on my radar, but I'd love to do one. I had such a good time at the Across the Years Last Person Standing. And that one's a little different. It's a mile every 15 minutes. But I love the format because you have to line back up with everyone, you know, very frequently. So it kind of resets the whole race. In a normal ultra, it's like if you're ahead of someone, you may never see them again. And this one regroups all the folks. You're like, you really feel like you're doing something together that's really tough. You're all going through something. And then the mind games, I think, are really interesting. And that might have been something they were doing when they were doing those fast sprint laps, trying to like jockey for, I don't know, mental position or something. Wardian, someone just mentioned, surprised he dropped it 150 miles, but then he just did Chicago Boston double last weekend. So, I mean, cause he did the virtual one. How far did they go? Do you remember that? Were they at like, Were they like over 60, I think? They were pretty far up there.
Yeah, I wanted to say 63, but that's just completely off the top of my head. The other thing to think about is
we basically had very few international runners this year. So remember Carl Saab, who won last year, wasn't here. Johan, Guillaume, and like the guys that had the previous record at 81, they weren't here. Like, this was a compromised field this year. It was amazing, but it was kind of the best of who could legally get here, not with open borders and everyone who was duly qualified. So I think next year's going to be the one to watch. And damn, I'm going to try my best to be there to help, probably with coverage or whatever they would need help. I would just go and I would commentate, whatever. Help film loops. I don't care. It'd be super fun. So, Solomon, call me up. Let's do it. Send me to Tennessee. Let's do it.
You do love hanging out with Laz in Tennessee, so I suppose
absolutely
probably could be done. I probably could be done. I mean, it's insane to think through just how far, just like the evolution of ultra running in the populace, like in the public space, has become, right? Because everybody was surprised by just the 200 milers and Barkley, it feels like 6-7 years ago. Everybody's just like, have you seen this documentary on Netflix? Like, did you hear that Courtney was on this Joe Rogan podcast? And now we got everybody and their mom coming out trying to run 300, 400, 500 miles in their backyard hour after hour. Like, and like, that's a normal thing that people who aren't really running fans are sort of starting to key into, like, not just in corners of social media. So it's just cool to see how that is coming more into the reality as well. I don't think we're going to see a bunch of like college track phenoms go that route. They'll probably stop the marathon and maybe some light trail stuff. But yeah, the fact that that's becoming a conversation point that folks are having, just the stupidity of ultra runners doing these types of challenges is pretty badass.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I think this is definitely one of the most interesting kind of current formats. And I think we need this. We need this in the sport. We need new things to keep people engaged and pushing their limits and redefining what's possible out here in the sport. So yeah, it's going to be fun to watch. And it's funny because it recalibrates when you start talking about numbers of hours or quote unquote yards instead of miles. It's just, it's like, oh yeah, 100 yards, which equals 4 point something. It's just, it's insane.
I wonder if, now this is generically philosophical, so ride with me on this one. You know, we talk so much about the folks who are winning races in any number of distances, ultras, marathons, shorter. But, you know, we also hear elites who are saying, like, I'm most impressed by the age groupers and the mid backpackers because they're out there for 28, 30 hours in a 100 miler or, you know, 48 hours or whatever it might be, a whole 5-6 days during a 200 miler. Because this is an hour or in a time-based format, like, is it almost an, I'm not saying easier, but like a more convenient on-ramp for folks who don't have that elite level speed to be like, hey, like, here is a weird ultra race that like I could excel at, because it's not about being the fastest person. It's about being the most consistent over a long duration, which if you're grinding at the back of a 200 mile race, might be you. Are we actually sort of tapping into what might be the most accepting mid to backpacker format? Is this a thing that we should be hyping up and trying to promote more?
That's exactly what it is. And that's what Laz says too. It's like, you don't have to be a speedster here. All you have to do is basically 4 miles an hour. It's a hike, kind of like, it's a fast walk. You can do a lap with a fast walk. And you can compete. Like, it resets every time. Everyone's in first place until you drop out. And there's only one winner at the end of the day. So you just have to outlast everyone. You have to preserve your body and your mind, and you have to keep that pace. It's an equalizer. It's very interesting.
We gotta figure out how we market this to the populace. You know, we gotta keep bringing more people in. Like, hey,
we'll see what Solomon does with it. You know, their involvement might bring some more people to it. Let's see. We got some chat in the comments here. People are talking about Wardian, or wonder if Michael McKnight would be interested. Seems like long and relatively slow would fit him. And then they're saying no carb versus Harvey vegan showdown. So turning it into a dietary battle. It is funny. Harvey was, they were doing a little interview with him, and he was trying to get like questions from the chat basically, but like there was no way to get him anything, but he was kind of talking about what he was using nutritionally. Of course, he does eat a plant-based diet. He was using Tailwind out there. He said he took no caffeine in the first 24 hours and then started took a little bit in the next 24 and then was taking more later. And he doesn't take any painkillers. So, interesting.
So you were taking notes because we know how you love to cut out caffeine like the week or two before a big race, so...
I mean, in theory, I used to do that. Yes. Let's see. What else do we got here? That's probably about all the chatter around this race. All right. So Hopefully you guys enjoyed that. There, some people would love to see Carl and Johan, you know, back or for the first time. Carl's never been there, but Johan, of course, has, obviously. Cool. Should we talk about some other races? We've got a race to preview in a minute, but we can see if there's anything else interesting that happened this week. I had the little recap pulled up here. There was a handful of races, actually a lot of international races, and there's also a handful of ones just kind of scattered around the U.S. I would say overall, well, Squamish was one I saw. So the Squamish 50-50 in British Columbia, Gary Robbins race. Did you see this at all? There was an atmospheric river event. So 6 inches of rain in 28 hours.
No.
Yeah. And they held the race. Like they got it off. Okay. So it's kind of interesting where like maybe they're, I mean, if there was 6 inches of rain here in Phoenix, like we would not be going anywhere.
Everything
we
would shut down. The tent flooded last time that happened.
It doesn't even take six. Like if we got three in 24 hours, it would be pandemonium. Like we just can't handle that much water. Whereas up there, I guess they can, you know, throw on some gloves, throw on your jacket. Your ground can absorb it. I don't know what's happening, but, they held their 50 mile followed by their 50K. They actually had a live stream at the finish line too. They had some people commentating there at the finish. So shout out to them for doing that. It looks like Anne-Marie Madden was the women's winner. And we had Mike Siddick and Nick Elson for the men. They were about 2 hours faster than the women's winner there. Handful of international races. Cappadocia Ultra Trail. I think that's an Ultra Trail World Tour race. There's Penigalosa Trail. I'm not going to go too much into those as, like, honestly, I don't know who the winners even were. There was another Golden Trail Series race. I think this is right before the championship. So this must have been the final. It's in El Hierro, the one race, Canary Islands. And Maud Mathis won. She's like typically wins those, I feel like. And then Francesco Puppi of Italy. He won.
Doing names, man.
It's not good. Thibault Bronien of France was second. So I think I saw that that final, I think, is coming up maybe this weekend. I saw Kieran from the U.S. is already over there. Shout out to him. But this weekend, we actually have, I think some people missed this announcement, actually. And maybe it was our fault for, A, not having Mountain Outhouse news and not having this podcast consistently over the summer. Oh.
Okay, cool. Now, which you said our, and then you said Mountain Outhouse news. That's your fault. The pod.
Yeah, that's my. Okay. Cool. That, are this channel? Like, we have not been the most consistent thing. And because of that, people are in the dark, apparently. I did not realize this, but I think when I was in Canada, I was talking to a couple folks, and they did not know that UTMB is a golden ticket race for Western States 100. So, everyone who's watching, all however many of you, 30 maybe, there are now Western States qualifiers that are in the summer and fall before Western States. You have UTMB. You have Grand Trail des Templiers. That's how I'm going to pronounce
Templier.
I said that earlier the proper way. Anyways, so we have that, and then we're following up with Havilland 100. So we've got three chances to get a golden ticket in 2021 for 2022. And then, of course, we kick it off with Bandera. Then we've got Black Canyon and Tarawera on the same day, I think. And then we've got Canyons 100K. So a lot of golden tickets going on right now. The original golden ticket.
So obviously Javelina, 100 miler. Historically, the rest of the golden ticket races are the traditional five. They've always been sort of like 50 mile or 100K. UTMB, obviously also 800 plus miler. This simply, is it 100 miles as well? Or is it a little bit shorter?
It is, I believe, the 108K. for the golden tickets.
All right. So we still have it new for 2022, two 100 mile plus opportunities to qualify in. And then for, obviously, this is a ridiculous mountain race of sorts. And then you have your sort of faster American based races that we've come to know and love.
Well, three international races, which is brand new. Like, there's never been a chance to qualify via golden ticket internationally. And where are all these tickets coming from? They're coming from the dissolution of the Ultra Trail World Tour. So that's ending this year. And so these spots were then transferred to these other races. So who's running Grand Trail des Templiers in France this weekend? And who might end up with spots in Western states? Azara Garcia of Spain. You may know her as Azara Storm, I think, on Instagram. But she just won the Ultra Pirineu 100K, which was a few weeks ago. That's the same race that Killian won. Has like 21,000 feet of climbing in Spain. And watch out for her. So that'll be pretty exciting. Ida Nelson from Sweden she's back. She had, I think, a couple tough years. She had some injuries, I think a surgery even. But she's kind of returning to form, and so we'll see how she does out there. And let's see who else I recognize. Ingvild Kaspersen. I remember she was competing in the Golden Trail Series a couple years ago, and she's from Norway as well. She'll be running. Let's see. I don't know a lot of these other names. Joe Meek, British runner. She's been on mountain trail championship teams before. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Natalie Mauclair. I recognize that name. She's a French runner. She won 2015 UTMB. That's probably why I know the name. And she's done well there a number of years. She was also third at Hard Rock. Man, there's a lot of people in this. It's pretty stacked. Okay. Top men. Here we go. Sebastian Spieler. He won the last edition of the North Face 50 Mile, and he also got second at Lake Sonoma. And so he is running. A lot of these other names I don't know. Andy Simmons. He's a British runner living in France. He was fifth place at 2019 UTMB. Looks like Darren Thomas was signed up, but he's going to be racing in the Azores instead for the Golden Trail World Series, which makes a lot of sense. He qualified after Broken Arrow, and he will be lining up at Black Canyon in February. So you'll be seeing more of Darren, that's for sure. But he was like 2 seconds behind Joe Gray at Broken Arrow, 25K, 26K, whatever it is. Robbie Simpson. He placed second at OCC before. Just kind of going through the list here. Johan Lance, one of our Swedish friends, is out there running. And man, there's just a bunch more names that I have no clue who these people are. So that's going to wrap it up. There's definitely some names that we know and we've seen and they've raced around. So we will recap that next week, whoever gets those tickets.
Yeah, next week's going to be a big show because we got to recap that. We got to recap Grand Raid, just like broadly.
That's right.
We can obviously preview it slightly here. And then we got to preview Javelina 100. So for any Javelina-based questions that may be popping up in the chat, hold on to those or drop them into the Discord so that we can have them ready to knock out on next Tuesday's show, because that's right. Golden tickets are coming back to Arizona Halloween weekend.
Yep, absolutely. Oh, I did want to shout out, this is kind of off topic, but I wanted to get it in there. Did you see that Sage Candidate and Sandy Nypaver, their apartment and all of their possessions burned this morning in Boulder? So just like sending thoughts out to them. That is... sad to see. Glad everyone was okay and got out of there. But yeah, definitely a tough thing to wake up to. It's crazy.
Yeah. I only saw it because of Strava and them posting about it there. But that it's one of those things you can never prepare for. Hate for it to happen to anyone, but obviously the ultra running community always takes care of our own. So sending our best to them and to everyone in the area, in the complex, look like, at least according to Sage's post, that everyone seems to have made it out okay, which is what you hope for if something like this happens. But wish them all the best, and I'm sure we'll, as a community, rally around to make sure that they're set up for success as this is getting into the, you know, the cold, dark, desolate winters of Boulder. So we'll do what we got to do.
Absolutely. What else do you want to cover?
I want to get your opinion on something. I don't know if you've seen this yet, but sort of fan favorite, I think friend of the pod, definitely. Our boy Taggart had a very interesting Instagram post earlier this week, which I'm sure you probably saw.
Yep.
He's obviously had big goals, was going for the 100 mile record for a bit there, took a big swing at it this past spring, this summer, I guess. And then all of a sudden this week pops up and says, my heart's not in the trails right now. I'm going back to the roads. I'm going back to marathoning and trying to hit this OTQ. So, I mean, he had just done a pretty prominent podcast with Debo like 3 weeks ago, talking about all of his ambitious goals that he had in the ultra scene. And now he's pivoting, totally switching paths and going back down to the road distance. So, obviously different circumstances, wish him all the best. It'll be interesting to follow his journey moving forward, but, one of the brightest stars in ultra running, at least one of the more controversial folks since Walmsley's initial, hop in to the ultra scene. He's heading back to the roads for a little bit. So,
well, I would say, I don't know if it's like trail specifically, because he's more of a road treadmill runner, I guess. Okay. But he basically like announced his retirement from ultras in an Instagram post. So I think he had a year. Like he lasted maybe less than a year, I think, in reality, from his launch at Tunnel Hill, I think, a year ago. So, I guess sad or disappointing to see, because it was so exciting to see a guy come onto the scene with like his work ethic and dedication, his insane training volume and mileage. It was something different and exciting that is always, you love to see it, but I guess it's not totally surprising. I mean, the amount of work he put in the last year is just totally wild, and I can understand like not being able to sustain that for very long, and you know, I would say I wouldn't count him out forever. You never know. Like, people weave in, they weave out. You know, he like walked away from triathlon 2 years ago, and he was going to do a triathlon this fall, and I think he's kind of just figuring out what he wants to do, probably with his life. He's young, he's 25, trying to figure it out. And I would say, you know, there's no way he's not going to be competing. I think he's going to do some marathons, maybe he's going to jump back to triathlon for a while. Wouldn't be surprised if he gets the bug, comes back in a couple years with some more experience under the belt, and he doesn't even need to run quite as much, but I'm sure he could still crush it. He's got talent. He's got work ethic. So, all the best to him. I'm sure I'll keep in touch with him. But, yeah, I did get the text before he made that announcement a few days ago that he had to withdraw from Desert Solstice. So,
yeah, he's gonna be one to watch. If he does actually go back to triathlons, it's going to be fun, because – from a personality standpoint, like, we have like the Lionel Sanders, Sam Longs of the world. If he starts creating content and goes all in on triathlon, it is going to be a spectacular watch. So I would almost hope he goes that route instead of just just running marathons, whatever. But yeah, it'd be good. I'd love to see it. Love to see it. Dude's hilarious.
Absolutely.
So, should we just keep the theme of bummers going?
Yeah, bummers.
So, didn't bring it up on our sort of secret pod last week. Crazy story out of Kenya. Agnes Tirop was murdered in her home. The former cross country champion just had like a stellar, 2021 campaign, and was back home. And like off the jump, everyone was just like, "Oh, her husband did it." And so he's been in court this week, but just a brutal, brutal murder, domestic violence incident of a rising star in Kenya. So obviously, I want to send our best to the entire Kenyan Athletics Federation and all their loved ones, her loved ones, and just a test and just sort of like a, it's almost PSA. It's been a weird year and a half. A lot of more people have been just like isolated. A lot more domestic violence has been swept under the rug because folks were sort of staying at home and not going out, weren't able to converse, or you wouldn't necessarily see the signs of someone potentially having been abused or not taken care of. And so obviously want to just put it out there. If you or someone you know is a victim, there are resources, there are confidential resources, there are ways to assist those folks in a way that we ultimately, can set them up for safety. So just never a bad time to know what those resources are and be able to refer someone there. So highly encourage you, if you're here in America, we have a whole host of resources. I'll drop a bunch into the Discord after this conversation is over. But just want to make sure that, hey, look out for yourself, your community, and others. Much like everything else, if you see something, say something. So just super tragic, but just want to put out that reminder. This is all too common, and it's one of those things that it takes all of us to put folks in check and take care of the folks that we know and love.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Word. All right. I'm sorry. We were cool and then we just like, no.
Yeah. We got to recover. We got to bounce back.
Okay. So let's pivot completely. Do we have plans for Javelina weekend? Me and you, we're going to cross paths. We're going to be in person. We're going to be, I'm assuming, commentating in the booth together. But I have no idea what the hell the plan is, because you texted me and asked me what the hell I was doing, and then you didn't text me after that. So what are we?
Well, that's because we are finishing making the plan. So you and I are gonna kick things off. We're gonna open the show. So we're gonna be in the studio. So I'm gonna make you get up early and come on down. Yay.
That's fine.
I mean,
so much coffee. We're gonna drink so much coffee that day.
Yeah, yeah. We'll probably get a spread. We should definitely get a spread. That's a good idea. I'm gonna have to work on that. We're gonna get all the stuff. We're going to kick off the show, so I guess we're going live at 5 a.m.
5 a.m.
Yep.
Saturday, October 30th.
Yep.
Cool.
I mean, if you want someone else to kick it off with me, you can roll in at 7 if you want. I don't care. It's up to you.
It's fine.
We're going to kick it off, and I think we'll spend the morning maybe until like early afternoon just hanging right here where I'm sitting. Watching the first couple laps of the Javelina 100 take place. And then I believe you are heading to a concert. I'm going to be heading to McDowell Mountain Regional Park, and we will, I think, reconvene at some point out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'll eventually be on the decks. I'll be on the wheels of steel, the ones and twos, rocking Javelina headquarters through the night.
Do you know what time you're getting out there, or are you just going to see however long the concert? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I love you guys, but I also love Mayor Hawthorne, so I will be enjoying that concert and then driving safely at a completely legal speed from downtown Phoenix to McDowell Mountain Regional Park. I would imagine it's got to be by midnight, though, right? And we're just all night long. So,
My plan, I'm going to be out there for a while, and then at some point make my way back to the studio to relieve the crew. Or just be here, technical capacity to assist and I'll probably end up closing out the show, taking over for like Second Sunrise to the end, doing some more commentary. That's the
Sweet.
plan at this point. So
30 plus hours of coverage,
yep.
all Javelina weekend, carrying you right near Halloween celebrations. So maybe you'll get some inspiration for some last minute costumes from the live stream. And as I mentioned earlier, we will do a full deep dive preview on the Javelina field and what to look for, major storylines, who's in line to get those golden tickets when we have this pod next Tuesday. Asterisk, asterisk, details forthcoming. Who knows? Life might happen and we push it to Wednesday. But
I'm pretty sure we have to do it Tuesday because there's too much else going on next week.
you don't
So,
want you don't want to do the pod from the back of the box truck in McDowell Mountain? Like, it'd be fun though.
no, I mean, no.
Cool. Yeah, no, we'll definitely dive into it. So again, if you have any questions or thoughts, feelings, whatever,
Well,
about
Alan
Javelina, then
Stark, real
Discourse.
quick, he did ask, "What's the course record at the Javelina 100?" I will pull up the exact time. I know it's Pat Reagan, 13:01,
One, yeah,
and
it sounds
then,
right.
yep, and then we've got Devin Yanko, and I'm going to say 14:49. Now I'm going to pull it up. Oh, it's actually
1452.
14:52:14. That was set in 2015 on the old course, so the old 6.5 lapper. Now it's a 5 lap. And then Patrick Reagan in 2017, 13:01:14. Early predictions. Is this a record-setting year at the Javelina 100 because of the golden tickets? Is that going to push it? Or do we have to wait for the preview show for that guess? Should we wait?
I think that's the teaser. We'll have some
Predictions.
we'll set some predictions, not just for course record and winners, but maybe some over-unders. Some, how many people break 14 on the men's side? How many people break 16, 17 on the women's? We'll set some betting lines. If you have novel ideas of predictions we should make, also drop those in the comments on the YouTube video, the one that you're seeing on this Mountain Outpost channel, or drop it in the Discord, as mentioned, linked usually in the comments, not in the comments, in the description of the video. And, let's see what weird shenanigans and completely irrational things we say on next week's show. So we should probably start plotting, planning, working on spreadsheets, getting ready for the commentating, and otherwise getting rest, because apparently me and you are not sleeping next week, buddy.
Nope.
Get excited. It's going to be just like the old Western States days. We're just going to like put heads on each other and just like hold each other up while we sleep. I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm excited. So I think let's go ahead and wrap this one up.
Let's wrap it.
And we will catch you guys next week. I've been Skizzle Fresh. He's been Jam Jam. This has been a podcast. And we'll catch you guys next week.
All right. See you guys.
Deuces.